Hello and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Jean Marie.
And Ron will not be with us today. We're going to see him next week, though. Okay. He promised. Today we're going to talk about a shift that's slowly, finally changing how medicine works. We're calling this episode Patients as Partners, the Rise of Shared Decision Making. When patients are treated as true partners in their own care, the progress or the result is going to be great. We're going to explore what shared decision making actually looks like, why it matters so much, where it's still falling short, and how you can advocate for yourself or a loved one.
Well, let's start with the basics. When we say shared decision-making, what are we talking about?
Shared decision-making is when clinicians and patients work together to make choices about tests, treatments, or care plans. Instead of the doctor saying, here's what we're doing, it's here are the options, here are the pros and cons, here's what matters most to you, let's decide together. It's not the patient being left alone to figure everything out, and it's not the clinician acting like a dictator. It's a partnership. The clinician brings the medical expertise, and the patient brings their values, goals, fears, and real-life circumstances.
And that real-life piece is huge. Two people with the same diagnoses might make very different decisions because of the way that they live their lives, their personal responsibilities, their belief systems, and the risk tolerance to eat, maybe a little bit different for each individual.
So why is shared decision making even necessary? What was happening before this? Well, for a long time, medicine followed a much more paternalistic model. Doctor knows best. Patient complies. Patients were often expected to be passive, nod, follow orders, don't ask too many questions.
But that approach is, is problematic. Many conditions have multiple reasonable options, and each has its own, benefit-risk ratio there and different trade-offs. And then also people have started to speak up about feeling dismissed or railroaded into decisions that didn't fit into their life. And then also people realize that adherence, actually sticking to a plan, taking your medication as prescribed and things of that nature, improves the plan when the plan actually matches the person.
Right.
It's practical and works with their lifestyle.
Absolutely. Well, add in the internet and patient communities, advocates, etc., mm-hmm. and suddenly people could access information, hear other stories, and realize that there are choices, and you have choices. Shared decision-making grew out of all of that. Ethics, patient rights, and practical reality.
All come into play, yep. And let's paint this picture. We're going to be painting by numbers. How might shared decision-making look in real-life situations?
Well, take cancer treatment.
Okay.
There might be a choice between surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, targeted drugs, or a combination, each with side effects and different impacts on fertility, work, ability to work, or long-term function. And in shared decision-making, the oncologist or the cancer doctor explains the options in understandable language, and then asks, what matters to you right now? Maximizing survival at all costs, preserving quality of life, protecting fertility, or something else entirely. And then they can tailor the plan around those priorities.
Okay.
Or think about somebody with chronic pain. Options might include medication, injections, physical therapy, behavioral therapy, different procedures or surgeries, and instead of saying, we'll just increase your pain meds, a clinician now might say, here are several approaches. here's what we know, here's what we don't know, and giving your goals, maybe staying alert for work or caregiving, that's something that we need to think about that makes sense for you.
And even small decisions can be shared decisions. Starting a new medication, deciding whether to pursue a risky test, or choosing between watchful waiting and immediate intervention. Those are all things that need to be decided between with a, you know, combined approach with the patient and the healthcare provider. Okay. And it's less about the size of the decision. It's more about the whole process.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the upsides. What are the benefits when patients are treated as partners? First of all, there's better alignment with the patient values. People are more likely to end up with treatments that match their preferences about risk, side effects, lifestyle, and what they consider an acceptable outcome.
When those things are all taken, yeah.
Okay. Into account, right?
Okay. Yep.
Secondly, better understanding when the clinicians explain options clearly and invite questions. Patients know why they are doing something, not just what's going to happen.
Right. And that can, as I said earlier, or like alluded to earlier, that can lead to better adherence. If you feel like you've actually had taken part in choosing your plan or your treatment, then you're more likely to follow along with things like medications and make sure that you adhere to your appointments, make those lifestyle changes, or even, you know, going to rehab and getting like physical therapy and things of that nature. So if you feel like you're part of that choice, you're more likely to adhere to that. And then there's also the trust piece. Shared decision-making can repair some mistrust that individuals might have, and certain communities might have, especially marginalized communities might have some mistrust from historical incidences and current issues that are unfortunately still occurring.
Like
racism in medicine and things of that nature, unfortunately.
Well, emotionally, it can reduce feelings of helplessness. Being sick or disabled, having a disability already means losing control in some areas, but being part of the decision-making gives some of the control back, which can be protective of your mental health.
And if shared decision-making is so great, why doesn't it happen all the time? Well, sometimes there's a barrier that we all face, which is time. Many appointments are short, and it can feel like, you know, there isn't time to say, you know, how do you feel about this? So it's just, here's what we're going to do. And that, you know, it takes more time to listen to the patient, take into consideration their values and everything, and wait for feedback. And then there's also the training aspect. If a clinician is not trained to communicate this way, it can be difficult to implement such a switch.
Yeah, and, you know, the modern day physicians.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Okay. Well, yep. I'm saying that they might have a different view.
Yeah.
There can also be culture and habit included. Some clinicians still feel that being the expert means giving firm, singular recommendations. And some patients grew up believing they shouldn't question a doctor, so they might even hesitate to speak up. Or even when they want to, they might just walk out of the office quietly and
not ask those questions.
Not ask the
because they feel intimidated.
Questions. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the greatest things anyone can do is when they don't know something, to say they don't know. And that can be challenging. Language barriers, health literacy, mistrust, they can also come into play. If medical terms feel overwhelming, or if they're confusing, if you've experienced issues in the past, it can be harder to feel like you are an active participant in your healthcare, and you might feel more like a bystander. And on top of that, healthcare systems, the system itself, can push towards quick, one-directional decisions, productivity metrics. I cannot talk today. Insurance can constrain many things, including time that healthcare providers have to provide for their patients. And limited access to second opinions can all make it harder for people to make informed decisions.
Well, let's get practical. For someone listening who wants to be a part more of a partner in their care, what can they do? A few ideas were prepare before the appointment. Sure. Write down your top concerns, questions, symptoms, and what you hope to get out of your visit. Ask about your options. You could say something like, just what are my options? Is there more than one way to handle this? Ask about pros and cons. For example, what are the benefits and the risks of each option? Or what happens if we wait and watch? You don't need to have medical training to ask those type of questions.
Right. And I think that's great advice. For example, if your medication is making you feel a certain way, you know, you're experiencing a side effect. So looking up your medication, looking up the side effects. And for example, if you, I was going to say sunburn, if you feel tired during the day after you take your medication, you could go in and ask, you know, talk to your doctor about that and say, hey, you know, I've noticed that I feel extremely tired after taking my medication. Is there an alternative medication? Is there something that won't have the same side effect? Is there a way I could take it in a different manner that maybe this would lessen the side effect? So being informed, learning as much as you can about your own health and the medications that you're taking, not feeling overwhelmed by that, and going to your healthcare provider for their expert advice. You could also bring someone with you, a friend or a family member. Make sure that you take notes. I know I always, my healthcare provider always provides me with an after summary of what we've talked about, and which always contains great advice. And maybe taking someone with you, they'll be able to speak up if you start to feel overwhelmed. So, you know, it's important to take that into consideration. And it's okay to say, hey, you know what, I need time to think about this. Or can I have this information written down so that I have to, you know, something to read when I get home? Are there things that I can read so that I can make a more educated decision? And that's quite all right. You can do that.
Yeah. And if something doesn't sit right with you, you can ask, can you explain why you're recommending this over the other options? Or even, how does this plan fit with my goals of continuing to work or caring for my kids or staying at home or avoiding certain side effects? You're not being difficult. You're doing shared decision making.
And what about when a listener feels like they're not being treated as a partner? What then? If it feels safe, you can gently name what you need. For example, I really want to understand all my options before deciding. Could we slow down and go over the risks and benefits once more? My values, for example, quality of life, staying independent, minimizing side effects, you know, are these. And how does this plan, you know, take that into account? Sometimes a clinician will respond well once they realize that those things are important to you.
Yes. And if that doesn't work, it's okay to seek a second opinion. That's not a betrayal. It's part of taking care of yourself. You can also ask to see someone else in the practice who might communicate differently or have more time for complex decisions.
And if you're in a hospital or a larger healthcare system, sometimes patient advocates or social workers can help you navigate tough decisions, clarify information, or help you to express or raise your concerns. And we should acknowledge that not everyone has the same freedom to push back or to change doctors because of their health insurance, geography, how many healthcare providers are in their region, or other realities. And in those cases, even small steps like writing down questions, bringing a support person, calmly repeating, you know, I still don't understand, those things can move things a little closer so that you are making a shared decision regarding your healthcare.
Good. Well, shared decision making doesn't happen in a vacuum. Things that are affecting it would be culture, race, gender, level of disability, language. They all affect how comfortable people feel about speaking up and how seriously they're going to be taken.
And we've heard from listeners who say that their symptoms, you know, sometimes are dismissed until a family member stepped in, or they weren't offered certain options until they were insistent about getting, you know, alternative options. Others have said that being a person of color, being a woman, or being someone with even an accent has changed how they were treated. in a truly shared decision-making model, clinicians should be actively working to reduce those inequalities and to check their own biases and make space for questions and use interpreters when needed and make sure that when written materials are available, that they're understandable and culturally appropriate. And patients shouldn't have to be, fit into one mold. They should be able to be themselves, and they should feel that they are heard and that they have are playing an active role in their care.
Well, if you've experienced discrimination or dismissal, it's not your fault. You're not too sensitive for feeling that something was off. Finding a clinician or a team that respects you is not a luxury. It can genuinely change your health outcomes.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that you might have to seek out. One more key point, shared decision-making isn't just a one-time event. It's an ongoing conversation. So your values, your symptoms, your circumstances, they can all change. And a choice that made sense for you a year ago might not be what works for you today. And your health can change, you know, based on your diet, your level of fitness, everything's constantly changing. So good clinicians will revisit decisions over time. Is this still working for you? How do we need to adjust this based on how you're living your life currently? Chronic illnesses, progressive conditions, and long-time treatments, that's just especially important. People go through phases, and fighting for aggressive treatment, prioritizing comfort, focusing on function, or shifting goals as an individual ages or as your family situation changes or your work situation changes, that's all par for the course. No one decision defines you. You're allowed to say, that's what I wanted then, but here's what I need now.
Well, as we wrap up, what does it mean to really treat patients as partners? It means recognizing that you are the expert on your own life. Clinicians may understand disease process and treatments, but you understand your body, your responsibilities, your fears, your hopes, and what you're willing or not willing to go through.
And I think it also means that you have to take an active role. For example, annotating your symptoms, how often they occur, the frequency, if other things are affecting them, and coming in with that information so that your healthcare provider has a accurate picture of what's going on. It also means accepting that uncertainty is part of medicine. Sometimes there isn't a single right choice, just different options with different trade-offs, and shared decision-making allows that reality to be honest and visible instead of pretending that there's a one-size-fits-all, cure-all answer.
Right. Not a Band-Aid can handle everything.
Nope.
Our hope is that more and more of you will feel empowered to say, I want to be part of this decision and not to carry the burden alone, but to sit at the table as a respected, essential member of your own care team.
And we hope that this episode helped to give you some ideas about how you can bring your next healthcare appointment, whether you're facing big decisions or small decisions, into perspective. And remember that asking questions or expressing your values is not being difficult. It's just being you. And it's part of being a partner, and that healthcare provider is part of that partnership. You deserve the care that sees you as a whole person and not just as a number.
Right. Well, thank you for joining us today on this episode of Podcast DX, Patients as Partners, The Rise of Shared Decision-Making. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast. Till next week.